This free program is paid for by the listener sponsors of WORT, Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. If you haven't already, please consider donating online to help keep Radio of the Free alive.
But I held her in my arms just to keep her from the foggy, foggy dew.
The Foggy Foggy Dew, a folk song from Suffolk, arranged by Benjamin Britten, who was at the piano with his friend Peter Pears. Thanks for being with me on this rescue edition of Fantasia. Stay tuned for the 8 o'clock buzz, which will be preceded by the Wind News Bulletin here on WORT FM 89.9 Madison.
You're listening to Wind, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hunger-striking Indian workers victimized by human labor trafficking allegedly committed by Signal International on the Gulf Coast took their quest to bring Signal to justice to Capitol Hill on Wednesday. Several of the hunger-striking workers have been hospitalized. Before escaping and reporting the abuse, the workers say they were enslaved at Signal labor camps under the H-2B worker visa program, which Congress is considering expanding. Stephen Boykevich is with the New Orleans Workers Center for Racial Justice.
What we need and what their main message is a just, fair immigration system and set of labor standards that give American workers the jobs they deserve. And when immigrant labor is necessary, then it ought to happen justly, humanely, with fair wages.
The workers hope their hunger strikes will compel Congress to bring Signal to justice with hearings and investigations. They also want a legal status called continued presence, the right to remain legally in the U.S. while their allegations are being investigated. Supporters of the workers rallied in Washington on Wednesday. They say anti-union companies like Signal are using the so-called guest worker program both to exploit and virtually enslave foreign workers while locking out American workers. Connecticut casinos may be getting bigger, but that doesn't mean that jobs are on the rise. Jesse Russell reports.
Foxwoods Resort Casino in Connecticut lifted the veil on the brand new 30-story MGM Grand Casino last week, while the nearby Mohegan Sun broke ground on a 39-story hotel and music hall. The massive expansions come as Americans are tightening their wallets in the face of a souring economy, and as the two tribal-run casinos make plans to cut jobs. Mohegan Sun recently announced plans to cut 600 jobs, while the Pequots are seeking voluntary layoffs within the tribal government. Foxwoods is also currently embroiled in a labor battle with the United Auto Workers. 6 months ago, the union was approved to represent Foxwoods dealers in contract negotiations. During the MGM Grand opening ceremonies, hundreds of workers and supporters rallied outside, demanding the tribe recognize the union. Here is today's economic report. Declining incomes are one of the biggest reasons 25 to 34-year-old males aren't surpassing the living standards of older generations. Earnings for young men with only high school diplomas fell by 29%. With wages falling, credit card debt is rising. 25 cents of every dollar for the younger age group goes to pay debt, double what baby boomers spent in 1989.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Good morning. You are tuned to WORT 89.9 FM here in Madison, Wisconsin. And let's see, so it's 8:06.
Did they tell you you could play your music at a reasonable volume?
I don't know. I just started off that way, and then I had to continue. It was actually a mistake. That's what we do here. We make mistakes, and then we capitalize upon them rather than suffering through them. All right. Speaking of mistakes, Martine, have you checked your Scrabble board yet?
Yes.
You should not have opened up a triple where I could use two triple word scores at one time.
I know. I was feeling generous.
Yeah, you're usually brutal. Well, thank you anyway for that. Hey, you know what, though? We do a radio show here, don't we? Don't we? All right, so we're going to tell you, this is the part of the show where we tell you what is on the show and who is on the show. I am Jonathan, so it's the Friday Buzz, and it's 8:07 about. On the show today, Emily Martin of the ACLU joins us to discuss sex segregation in the classroom. They are representing students in a challenge to sex segregation in Kentucky Public School. They're also suing the U.S. Department of Education on behalf of five families, and we'll tell you more about that when we get to that. All right. Also, Slick and Slack, everything biofuel. That a more controversial segment in recent days than it had been when we started that one. Always have to address that, whether we ought to, you know, what it means to burn your food source. And of course, there are ways around that. There are ways to do that well. Jeff Brady and Randall Harrison are part of, and in fact, I'm going to guess, the complete part of the string percussion duo, Harrison Brady Overdrive, HBO. That's what the kids are calling them, is HBO. And they preview their show tonight at Mother Fools. They'll be playing live in the studio. Bike traffic report, of course, with Peter Brinson. Getting a wrap-up on Bike to Work Week.
Yeah, I hear there's been some duck activity on the bike path.
Uh-oh.
Peter will address that.
All right, ducks on the bike path. Hear about how one Madison man is dealing with ducks on the bike path. All that and more here on WORT.
Science of Sound presents What For at the High Noon Saloon Friday, May 23rd at 10 p.m. What For will be releasing their new album, Sooner Late Than Never, with opening acts Pale Young Gentleman, His and Her Vanities, and National Beekeeper Society. What For's new album is smart and crafty and manages to stay upbeat with a self-mockery in 60s brand pop. It channels the joy of the Kinks, jointed by the Beatles' harmonies, and a vocal style reminiscent of Rufus Wainwright. This show is for ages 21 and up, bringing you the new music of local artists. This is WORT 89.9 FM, community radio in Madison.
The High Noon Saloon presents Madison native steel guitar picker Joel Patterson on Thursday, May 29th at 8:30 p.m. for a 21 and over CD release party. As a transplant to Chicago who has never forgotten his roots, Joel is pleased to unveil his new solo CD, Steel Is Real. In addition to his previous solo blues and country albums, Joel can also be heard with such faves as Devil in a Woodpile and the Joel Patterson Trio. The new album on his own Ventrella Records label highlights his six-string and pedal steel virtuosity. That's Joel Patterson's CD release party at the High Noon Saloon on May 29th at 8:30 p.m. Picking up the slack, this is WORT 89.9 FM, listener-sponsored community radio in Madison.
We'll be right back. घर में पत्ते गिरते हैं पत्ते गिरती है जिंदगी के सफर में पत्ते गिरते हैं पत्ते गिरती है मौके चक्कर में सबके समय आती है समय आती है जिंदगी के सफर में पत्ते गिरते हैं देखो पत्ते का रंग
We've been listening to the sweet sounds of Sacha Silva with The Circle. This is from the release Anatomy of a Coup.
Thank you, Martin. And joining us on the phone, Emily Martin of the ACLU Women's Rights Project. We're talking about sex segregation in the classroom in Kentucky. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this was going on. I had no idea, and evidently the parents of the kids in this school had no idea this was going on either. This was something that was just kind of foisted upon them very quickly, that all of a sudden your boys are in one class and your girls are in another class. They weren't told they could opt out. Why this stealth movement to separate? What are they thinking? Let's start with that, and then we'll talk about what's wrong with it. But why did they separate them in this way in the middle schools in Kentucky?
Well, this Kentucky middle school had been doing some single-sex classes for the past few years, but had at least been making it voluntary, saying that parents could choose whether their students should be assigned to these classes or not. And then this fall, in the 2007-2008 school year, the school, according to the school board, decided that it had been such a success over the past few years that they were just going to assign students to these classes without giving parents any options. And that's what got our clients upset when their students were assigned to either single sex or in some instances colored classes, but without any sort of parental input whatsoever, which they didn't care for. Our lead plaintiff, for instance, has a daughter who's excellent at math and who was assigned to the all girls math class. Her father, her parents don't believe in single sex education, think that it's important that she learn to compete with boys, to interact with boys, just like the real world is co-ed. They think her education should be co-ed. But they were in a fix because the class she was assigned to was the best class in the school. It was an algebra class, and there was no co-ed algebra class. There was a co-ed pre-algebra class. And so, in essence, they were forced to keep her in single-sex classes for the year because it was all or nothing, all single-sex or nothing. And they wanted her to have the best education possible, and the co-ed classes that were being provided didn't provide that education. So they're upset about that.
Who is guiding this kind of thing? It sounds like, you know, it would have some kind of religious input, or who is advocating single-sex classrooms?
Well, we're still trying to figure out exactly what motivated it in this particular school, but this is a big movement across the country right now, and I think various arguments come together, but the argument that I'm seeing the most of and that seems to be going on in this particular school seems to be gaining steam across the country is an idea that boys' brains and girls' brains are just so different that they can't both succeed in the same classroom. And the people who push this notion say that you really need to teach boys very differently from the way you teach girls, that boys need a very, for instance, competitive, high-stress, high-energy environment. Boys need to be out of their seats, moving around a lot. Boys need a lot of opportunity to compete with each other. Boys think best when there's something high stakes going on. While girls, these folks argue, girls just don't function well under stress. Girls need to not have time limits in class, for instance, no time limits on tests. Girls should be encouraged to sit down and cuddle in blankets that they brought from home to be as warm and comfortable as possible. And girls' classes should really emphasize teamwork and friendship because that's how girls succeed. And obviously, or I hope obviously, I find this troubling. I think that this trend is really just a reversion to the worst sorts of gender stereotypes that we've spent so much time seeking to overcome in the classroom and in the workplace. And I'm really concerned that as more and more schools jump into this trend based on the notion that this reflects some cutting-edge brain science, that we're going to be producing boys and girls who just aren't well-equipped to deal in a coeducational world. And I think that's a real shame.
Oh, and they're not changing the world also? I thought they'd be going out there and changing the world.
I hope not.
Oh. Yeah, they're probably trying to do that too. So adding to that list of differences between boys and girls, there's this guy, David Chadwell, director of single-sex initiatives in the South Carolina Department of Education. They've hired him as a consultant on this, and he writes about, here's another egregious one I think you left out, about allowing boys to talk loudly in class and insisting that girls remain quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, David Chadwell is one of the big spokespeople for this notion that boys and girls just need to be treated very, very differently by teachers. And one of the theories that is out there and that he is a proponent of is that boys are naturally noisy, that boys, in fact, don't hear as well as girls, so you have to yell at boys or they won't hear, and thus boys should be yelling at each other in class or they won't hear, while girls hear better, and so you have to speak very quietly to them and keep their classrooms quiet because girls can't function with the distractions of too much noise. And again, it masquerades as scientific discovery. It's junk science. It's a popularization of the kinds of stereotypes that we rejected as a society a generation ago, brought back in new form. And I think it's a really disturbing trend.
I want to make a comparison, and I'm not sure it's fair, but let's just use it as a model. The closest thing I can think of is gym class, Phi Ed. Mm-hmm. So there we've decided, okay, you know, the society has grossly overestimated the difference between boys and girls. And we have put girls, you know, back when I was going to school, the girls took square dancing while the boys did something athletic. You know, the girls also did some athletic things, but clearly they did Red Cross, they did dance, they did all these things that were not as athletic as the boys. And we realized that was wrong. But we also came to the conclusion as a society that there are some differences and that there is some benefit at a certain point to separating them. And then we had, what, Title IX that says, okay, but if we're going to do that, we've got to make it equal. So talk about the parallels and why this is different. I think one of the things is that what they've got down there is not equal. But just can you make that comparison?
Well, yeah, I do think that one important difference is that in this particular Kentucky school and in a lot of these experiments around the country, schools are purposefully implementing programs that are different, that are explicitly different, that's the purpose of the program, that they're not seeking to be strictly equal. I think the other difference is, well, I think one thing worth noting is that Title IX didn't say separate phys ed classes are okay. It said in very particular instances like contact sports, it might be okay. And I think that's important, that what Title IX said is that only if there's a really, really good reason do you separate the genders, and if it's football, maybe there's a good reason. Maybe it's physically dangerous because there are physical differences between boys and girls. But I think that there just isn't good evidence, there isn't good science, that there's meaningful, big cognitive differences between boys and girls. The average sex differences on cognitive measures are really very small. And what even more importantly, any average sex difference doesn't tell you anything about an individual. So if you know, for instance, that on average, girls score a couple points higher than boys on a reading comprehension test, that really doesn't tell you whether this individual boy is going to score better or worse than this individual girl. And I think that's the real problem. Overgeneralizing from some notion of what an average boy needs and an average girl needs, and really ignoring the fact that there's a huge spectrum of boys and girls and millions who depart from any sort of average. And I think that's a real concern here.
And how do they manage the opt-outs? I mean, as we know, schools are challenged in their class size and number of teachers. And so how can you have set up what they think is their best system with boys' classes and girls' classes, and then somebody wants to opt out, and what class can they possibly go into? They've got to create a new math class for the person that wants to opt out of the single-sex class?
I think that's one of the problems this case really reveals. And here's another illustration of that. As I said, last year, or this school year, the best math classes were the all-boys class and all-girls algebra class, and then there was a co-ed pre-algebra class that really wasn't comparable. Now, apparently, to avoid that problem next year, what the school has announced it's doing is they won't have algebra at all. It'll just be pre-algebra for everybody. And I suppose that helps solve some of the inequality issues, but it really shows the strange sorts of permutations that a school system has to go through to create these programs. And wouldn't it make more sense just to have a coeducational algebra class, coeducational pre-algebra classes, and let people take the math class that was appropriate for them without worrying about whether they were a boy or a girl?
Sure, you can only slice it so many ways. So if you're not going to slice it by academic achievement and level, then and you want to slice it by gender, then you probably have to give up, you know, slicing it as by that achievement. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
So talk about this case from a legal point of view. There's lots of ways we can be outraged about this or think it's wrong. How will you go at this case? How are you going at this case to undo this system? What are your main points?
Well, the most exciting thing about this case is that we're not just bringing it against the Breckinridge County, Kentucky School Board of Education. What we are doing is arguing that the United States Department of Education has violated the Constitution and Title IX when it issued regulations in 2006 that purported to allow public schools around the country to institute single-sex classes in various circumstances. The U.S. Department of Ed basically changed 30 years of Title IX law and said, even though for a generation we've said that co-ed schools shouldn't and cannot segregate students by sex in these academic classes, we've changed our minds. We think that schools should be able to experiment if they want to, and as long as they're doing it to forward a diversity of educational options, schools can institute single-sex classes. And we're arguing that that is not consistent with what Title IX says, and that it also violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. And the reason this is exciting is if we succeed, that this has implications across the country. As I said, schools in Wisconsin, in many places around the country, are implementing these single-sex programs, often on the basis of very little data indicating their effectiveness, very little hard research showing that this is going to benefit anybody at all. And we're really hopeful that this case will lead to a rollback of the U.S. Department of Education regulations and a rollback of this trend at a national level.
And do you think that do you have the resistance on the other side? Do you have the commitment from the school board there in the school to that this case will go to the point where you can have that effect? Or do you think they may just kind of roll over and settle?
So far, they're very committed to their segregation program. They think that they have... Yes, they're very committed to their program. They, so far, have shown every signs of defending it to the fullest, and we expect this fight to go forward.
And so, in a way, that's a good thing that they want to defend it, because it'll out in the light of day, whereas if it does settle, then maybe the issue doesn't get resolved, right?
I think there are definite benefits to having this conversation in an open forum, and... Yes, I think that this is an exciting case. It's an issue that we at the ACLU Women's Rights Project have been monitoring for some time. I think this is an excellent case to have a conversation about what's really going on in these programs, and I'm hopeful that we can use this opportunity to help educate the broader public about these issues, because I think a lot of people would be shocked if they knew what their local school systems were doing.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We have been speaking with Emily Martin, of the Deputy Director of the ACLU Women's Rights Project, about this segregation case in Kentucky Public School. And good luck with the case. We will stay on it here and keep our audience updated on how that all comes out.
Thank you.
All right. It is 8:25, and still to go, the bike traffic report, Slick and Slack, and Harrison Brady Overdrive. We'll be right back. heard right before the Tour de France theme, Bike Traffic Report theme, 30 amp fuse from Punk Virtuoso, a choice, I believe, from Bodhi, our engineer in training. That's right. Yes, he's making all the sign of the devil thing, so it must be his choice. Peter Brinson, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan. How's it going?
It's good. Are you serpentining through ducks or their scat on the bike path? What's up? I hear there's some issues with ducks out there on the for our bike traffic report.
Yeah, well, I'm not right there right now. I'm making my way through downtown and pedestrians and cars and things right now. But, you know, it's a wonderful time of year here in Madison with the goose poop proliferating all over the bike path. But the big news, you know, for all of us wildlife lovers, if they can be called wildlife, is that the first ducklings have been sighted this year along the Monona bike path by the Monona Terrace, and they're so cute.
All right, so we should ride along there and note the cute ducklings, and you should also, people, I have some advice. They should make way for ducklings if they see them crossing the bike path.
They're little duckling crossing things, right? Well, you know, and for parents, right, this is your last warning to get a little sex ed lesson in for your kids here, you know. There are sightings of ducks aggressively attempting to perform their little ritual. And, you know, birds and the bees, people. You got to learn about this stuff somehow.
So take your kids in there, Burley, and go down and watch the ducks doing it and have
exactly.
That talk. Have that talk. And then you take a ride a little later, and you look at the ducklings, and it all makes sense.
Exactly.
Who knew? I had no idea.
Jonathan.
I had no idea we'd be talking about this, Peter, this morning. Very interesting.
Well, I'm happy to add a little spice to your life.
Yeah. Well, it is sweeps week, and we had to sex up the bike traffic report somehow. And if it has to be ducks, then so be it. All right. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Some announcements for you.
Oh, we have an announcement. We have an announcement that I'm not going to read, and then I'll have more announcements for you.
I want to ride my... Gas prices keep going up, the ice caps are melting, and politicians keep waging wars for oil. What are we going to do?
Hey, why don't we ride our bikes 300 miles for 12 days in a mobile village of resistance to St. Paul this summer? Just in time to protest the historic Republican National Convention. What do you say?
300 miles? No way. I gotta drive my car.
But you just said gas prices keep going up. Don't you see that America's transportation system has got to change? This bike ride will demonstrate the power of the bicycle as a real form of distance transportation. Plus, it gives the chance to experience direct democracy in our own intentional community rather than relying on politicians to solve our problems.
Well, okay. How do I find out more?
This Monday, May 26th, on the Access Hour at 7 p.m. on WORT. You can find out more information about the Grassroots Caravan and the upcoming trip to the RNC in St. Paul.
Awesome! Coming your way, so forget all
your duties, oh yeah. Tune in to the Cosmic Radiation Show this Wednesday morning, May 28th, from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. for our annual birthday tribute to two of the American Midwest's most legendary musicians. Bob Dylan is 67 this year, and Miles Davis was also born 82 years ago this week. So we'll be playing selections from both of these iconic artists, covering both their acoustic roots and the electrified music that made both of them so controversial. That's Cosmic Radiation every week from 2 a.m. bar time Tuesday night until 5 a.m. Wednesday morning, this week featuring a tribute to Miles Davis and Bob Dylan. Here on your listener-sponsored community radio station, WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, and on the internet at WORTFM.org and CosmicRadiation.com, with Cosmic spelled K-O-S-M-I-K.
Hey, it was nice the way you bundled those two announcements like that. They've shared something in common, biking 300 miles and staying up from 2 to 5. I don't know what it is. I just sense there's something similar about those things that maybe it'd be hard to get some people to do
that. Coffee and or speed may be involved in either one.
Oh, yeah, that too. I didn't think of that. On Saturday, the Madison Area Peace Coalition and other organizations will inaugurate Memorial Day weekend with an anti-war march to the Capitol Square, a short street theater skit during the farmers market, and testimonials against war and empire at the Orpheum Stage Door Theater. The grand opening celebration for Madison's new low-power FM radio station, WIDE, takes place this afternoon from noon until 4 p.m. at the Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society at 2010 Winona Drive. Info, 238-5740. Whole Foods hosts the world's largest veggie brat fest this Saturday afternoon, while meat eaters descend on the Alliant Energy Center this weekend for the world's largest brat fest. For more on these events, visit www.allanimals.org and www.bratfest.com. Right. What a great series, bunch of options there. Mm-hmm. For you meat eaters or vegetarians, we got it all covered here on the Friday Buzz. A Save the Children Foundation benefit party for the victims of the Burma cyclone disaster of May 4th will take place tomorrow from 2 until 9 p.m. at the Token Creek Disc Golf Shelter at 1706 Norman Way. For more information, contact Robin at xobin@hotmail.com. And the weather? Today, a high of 62, a low of 42, cloudy, precipitation 20%. Tomorrow, high of 73, low of 51, precipitation only 10%. And Sunday, a high of 80 with scattered thunderstorms and a low of 67. About a 50% chance of precipitation on Sunday. All right, well, we'll be back momentarily with Slick and Slack. It's the word for Slick and Slack. Slick is here. Slack is there.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is Slack
good
there?
Good morning, Jonathan.
There he is. There's Slack. Hey, so the negative space of biofuel, of biking, of sustainable energy. Let's talk about oil. Let's talk about grilling oil executives in front of Senate committee.
Jonathan, I was reading an article about the Senate hearing with the oil executives, and on the one hand, they're saying that they don't have much control over the price of oil, although they do profit handsomely when the price is high. And then at the same time...
Well, let's even stop on that for a moment. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. People don't always profit handsomely when price is high, because you still, you just have a margin, you know. Does the margin change?
I think that they're vertically integrated, so the price of their labor, the price of what it takes to produce that petroleum doesn't really change that much.
No, but, okay, so if everything stays constant except this cost of the raw material, of the crude oil, say, then, and that goes up, then, and if they're making, do they need to make a percentage on it? That would be one way you could say they're making more money, but they don't have to mark it up by a percentage. They can say we need to make 20 cents a gallon or whatever it is. And in that case, their profits would not go up. So I don't get that part.
Correct. I can't say that I understand that either.
In fact, sometimes when the price goes up, a business, in order to keep selling their product, will reduce their margin and say, okay, you know, people aren't going to buy this. We're going to get in trouble with the Senate, whatever it is. We're going to cut our margin a little to keep, because this price would just be too high for our product. So too bad, it costs too much for us to make.
That's right. I mean, it would be better if some of the profit were I guess I'd have to say regulated, in that it's a product that's so important to everyone, kind of the public interest, that having that price completely subject to supply and demand really favors consumption, and it's not one of those resources that we want to consume excessively. It's something that's got its place. So I'm, you know, pretty skeptical about like the price.
Like once again, your beautiful sense of this is a wonderful thing, really. But you know what really matters is $11 billion in profit per quarter.
That's what they're making. Yeah, but why should it go up? Nobody's answered that question yet. Why their profits would go up when the price goes up?
Well, I think Slick is answering it, in that they have all the fixed costs that basically have maintained stable. But the speculation in the market right now is a big, big driver in an increased demand in the allegedly free market. But basically, they're just getting windfall profits from that, and our government doesn't regulate it. They can make as much as they want.
So the cost of it truly has not gone up then. It's just that there's speculation that drives it up, just the way a stock goes up on kind of ideas and people's instincts and things like that drives the price up.
If people will pay more, then you raise the price and see if they'll continue to pay more. But since those oil companies basically own that oil, if the price goes up, it just becomes more valuable. And I think that's what we're seeing. And yet at the same time, those same industry execs say, you know, do not lift the tariff on foreign ethanol, which further increases the price of the end product fuel for everyday drivers.
And who is advocating to lift the tariff on ethanol?
Well, Slack, can you help me out here?
You know, unfortunately, I can't. I don't really pay a lot of attention to ethanol. I'm sorry. Now that I have my donkey, I'm off of it all.
All right.
Somebody must be, or else they wouldn't be urging us not to do it.
I can tell you this, guys. I'm up in northwestern Wisconsin right now at my favorite coffee shop in Wisconsin, and I'm surrounded by fields that have just been planted in corn, fields that haven't been planted for years in corn. It's amazing how much corn is getting planted right now. And who can blame farmers? I mean, it's $6 a bushel. I'd probably be planting corn if I had land, too, but... It's a really interesting situation here in rural Wisconsin, I would say.
And what are they doing with that corn? What are they growing? There's so many things you can grow corn for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just saw this movie called King Corn, and you know, they went through a grocery store, and basically everything in an aisle had corn in it. You know, corn syrup, just everything made of corn. But a lot of it's going to ethanol. Some is going to ethanol, and I, you know, there's a lot of people who are getting kind of testy about the anti-biofuels message that's getting out. But, you know, there are certain facts. A certain amount of corn in America goes to ethanol, and I think the percentage I heard last was something like 30%, but I could be wrong on that. Point being that the price of corn is incredibly high, and farmers are planting it like crazy, which could drop it down a little, but right now it's just like everybody's gone corn wild. It's kind of like the gold rush.
Wow. And is it any kind of corn? Because, I mean, I guess fuel corn is probably a lot like feed corn, and then eating corn's different. Is it all valuable?
Yeah, this is all field corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the percentage might be around 7% globally of corn that would go into biofuels at this point. So that's a significant percentage. It's no longer negligible. And so I guess one of the questions is that is there in the corporate charter for these oil companies that have merged into many fewer companies than there were 10 or 12 years ago, is there some kind of a public responsibility that cuts across their financial responsibilities to their shareholders? And for some products, it seems like this would be more important than for other products, and energy being such an important thing to everyone's life, just to cook food, just to have hot water, just to have a heated home space. It's one of those things where being in that industry, to me, should be more like a public service. You kind of know what you're going to get paid, but you can't have windfall profits, because when that happens, some people go without, and then they suffer.
It's like you got to be careful. They might start calling you Hugo.
No, I'm not. I'm not Hugo. I'm definitely not. I'm rational. I'm reasonable. And I love America.
We were talking about smelling the stench of the devil after Perry O'Laire left the studio from his classical show. I remember when you came in, you said that. No, you didn't say that. Perry's a nice guy, and you didn't say that.
Wait, Slick, are you advocating nationalization of oil companies?
No, I'm advocating the next generation of something better than that.
Which is?
Stay tuned.
National regulation of the oil industry. Okay, well, let's segue seamlessly into our next guest. We have HBO in the studio, and usually I would say, thank you, Slick and Slack, and then there'd be something playing on the stereo.
Well, we can just sign out like we normally do. So if you got to go.
Yeah. Go with Greece.
Thank you.
right, HBO. HBO. So you, just the two of you, huh? I almost thought it was a trio at first.
It's a duet of two.
Yeah, Harrison Brady Overdrive. That's what that stands for. You're at Mother Fools tonight. Is that your composition there?
It is. Thank God,
Randy.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I call you that?
You can call me whatever you want.
That's what I'm going to call you. I'm going to call the other guy Jeff.
Okay.
Hey. And is that the this is the 8 o'clock buzz intimate morning version of the keys, right?
Yeah, Jonathan. I thought, you know, it's early in the morning. What do people like? What, you know, what's more fun than a glockenspiel? A really high pitched metallic instrument struck with hard mallets. Really early in the morning, first thing. You know, I just thought, you know.
You're right, though. It is cheery, and maybe if it's overly cheery for those that aren't in that mood yet, but it is cheery.
That kind of brings me back to my childhood and that those morning announcements at school. Jing, jing, jing.
Yeah, what should be announced?
Very interesting. Like that.
It'll be 80 degrees on Sunday.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, feel free to poke and noodle about as we talk. And ooh, launch into complete tunes or just fragments or whatever you want to do. It doesn't have to be this, like, this division between talking, interviewing, playing, and all that.
Ah.
Not with you guys.
No.
Wow, Jonathan. This is, like, really freeform and advanced. I wasn't really counting on this.
Well, early in the morning, you know.
To ask musicians, though, to communicate just through words and not... Yeah, see, it could be where you can talk and play at the same time. I think otherwise, it's like having your hands tied behind your back.
It's my listening music.
I can't talk and play at the same time. It's the thing.
Really, I like doing that. That's my problem. I don't have an instrument to play while
like
I'm interviewing
singer,
people.
Songwriter. So it's more. Yeah. It's more of a, you know, what do you call it? Correlation between words and music with what you do.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So let's get right to it, though. Let's get right to the big issues. This show tonight, Harrison Brady Overdrive. And we're previewing that show. It's at Mother Fools this evening. You know where that is, right? It's at 1101 East Williamson Street.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, you know, obviously you make beautiful music together, but you also have different ways of looking at the world. I want to talk about your different approaches to owning cats.
We have two.
You have two cats, Jeff?
Randy and I have two.
We have three in combination.
My household, there's two.
You don't share the cats.
No, we don't live in the same house.
That's the first important thing to know.
Cats don't share well. No, they do.
Right. Yeah. And you two don't share the cats either, between the two of you.
Which
allows you to have a different approach to how you raise cats. Your cats.
My cats, I'm more of a dog guy, and I've...
Okay. It comes out.
It does. I'm not a big cat guy. But this cat came out of the woods one day and acted a lot like a dog. Walked to the mailbox with me. Walked back. I was going to train it to get my slippers soon, but then it turned into a cat. And the problem is, I bonded with it, so I can't get rid of it. But you know, it's still
a cat. It's kind of like that Who song, "I'm a boy, I'm a boy." My mother won't admit it. So you want to force it into a role as a dog, and
it's just not working.
Yeah, that must be hard on the cat. And Jeff, you know, you've been known to take your cats and put ties on them and photograph them, make them do promotional work for your music projects.
Yeah, they actually like wearing ties.
Uh-huh.
It was really quite strange. Like the boy does. We have a boy and a girl. They're sisters. They're domestic short-haired tabbies, about 12 years old, but they look a lot younger. Anyway... So one day I decide I'm going to put neckties on them, right? And I was like, whoa, they're never going to go for this. But, you know, I was bored, so what are the cats for if not to, you know...
Decorate and amuse you, sure.
And amuse me, yeah, right. You know, the boy cat, Puck, really liked it. He was just like...
He looks good in a tie, too. I can see why he'd like it.
Yeah, he has good posture, and he looks very, you know, sort of dignified, really. Yeah. Dignified, but also... You know, he has a little air of, what's the word? Yeah. I don't know.
Kind of
sort of
dapper.
Insouciance.
That would be the word, I guess.
So, and the girl doesn't, she's more retiring. She doesn't go for, like, you know, dressing up flashy. She just wants to, like, you know, have naps and get some food sometimes and, you know, vomit.
Sure. All the fun cat stuff. Yeah. Well, this is really bringing it right back. Our first segment was about separating sex in the classroom. You know, boys in one classroom, girls in another.
Right.
So, oh, yeah, I heard that.
Kentucky thing.
Yeah. So see that with your cats. Well, what about the music? How does that translate in the music? I assume all the music is pretty much about that.
It's all cat music.
Mm-hmm. That last tune.
It's entitled Tangology. It's a tango for felines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we also we play in a trio called the Randall Harrison Trio.
Featuring Jeffrey Brighting and Mark Ernest.
Yeah, the problem is Mark Ernest, the bass player, lives far away, so we can't play around here very much.
It's true.
Unfortunately. So
when we get one of those big money gigs, then we'll do some other things.
What about his cat? Does he have a cat? Yeah.
Does he have a cat?
I'm sorry, Mark?
Yeah.
I don't believe he has a cat.
But all of a sudden, I'm sensing that somehow...
He has a daughter.
Oh, okay. There you go. That maybe I've barked up the wrong tree with this interview. I thought for sure it would all be like cats. This is a way to go to uncover what these people do, what they're about. And now I'm thinking, oh, maybe it's about the fact that you're usually a trio, and now you're a duo, and how does that change the music?
Well, we get to really experiment with a lot of different things. I mean, with the trio, right now we're doing all original stuff, but it's... all my original stuff, and when Jeff and I are doing as the duet, we're really playing each other's music a lot. We're doing a few numbers of Jeff's tonight, a few of mine, and then some Schoenberg and some other vehicles to take off with. Really gets outside.
Yeah, to mix it up a little bit.
Well, it also takes a lot of the time out of it, or the being tied to time, because the bass is, that's one of his jobs, is to keep you all corralled, right? And unbeaten, whatever. So you know, you got a lot. You still got all the notes, and maybe playing the same key if you feel like it. But does it free you up? Does it do the time constraints change the music?
I don't know about that. I mean, we are just the nature of this duet and our approach to it is we can be very free with time. So
even with the bass player,
even with the bass player, but without the bass player in the duet, we just. Decide we're going to do a lot more free stuff. The trio's a little more structured, a little more accessible.
That's what
stuff.
I'm saying. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the instrument I play is more, it's a bigger version of this thing. It's called the vibraphone. It's kind of a keyboard instrument, so that gives it more of a, kind of more of a chamber music quality.
And the trio is more, it's got the bass, you know, laying down that, and then the melody instrument, and Jeff's playing drums, so it's, harmonically, it's a lot more free. And then with the duet, it's harmonically a little more complex and intricate and whatnot because it's got the
chords.
Comping instrument of the vibraphone.
Chords everywhere.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and also Mother Fools is a good place to hear music of this sort. I think it's a smaller space and, you know, it works really well for...
It's intimate.
More intimate.
It is.
Yeah.
It's
and you can sit on the couch if you get there early.
There's a couch to sit on, yes. It's very nice. Come on by.
All right.
Coffee.
Well, why don't you play another tune? We got a few minutes.
Now?
We got like a 2-minute tune?
We have a 2-minute tune. We're going to call this Early Morning Wart. Thank you.
All right. Hey, that is Jeff Brady and Randall Harrison of the string percussion duo Harrison Brady Overdrive. And you can see them at Mother Fools tonight and hear them. Thanks for coming down early in the morning, guys.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And thanks to everybody else who worked on today's show. Martin and Bodie behind the board, our engineer in training. Emily producing. Nancy on the phones. Up next, it'll be the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. And also, I'm going to thank all the people who came on the show and all the people for listening out there. Then after that Insurgent Radio Kiosk, we got Mud Acres with Chris Powers and all the great things that follow on Fridays. I'm Jonathan Zarov, and as usual, I am out of hair.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
This is Richard Chamberlain from the Madison Chapter of Veterans for Peace. This Sunday, in preparation for Memorial Day, the Clarence Kalin Chapter of Veterans for Peace is erecting 4,582 tombstones along Atwood Avenue in Obrick Park to honor American soldiers who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan. These tombstones are meant to be a stark reminder of the cost of war, now entering its sixth year. 50,000 more soldiers have been wounded, 60,000 are being treated for PTSD, and civilian casualties are well over a million. As of March, the war has cost U.S. taxpayers over $500 billion. The sad truth is that we have become bogged down in a war without end, as our sons and daughters, fathers and mothers, friends and neighbors continue to die. We can only hope that through their sacrifices, this nation will come to realize that it is time to heal the wounded, bury the dead, and end the war. Wisconsin flags will mark the 92 Wisconsin dead. The public is invited to come and place a flower, say a prayer, write a comment, or talk with Vets for Peace members who will be staffing a small tent on the site. We need help watching over the tombstones, and we'll have a sign-up sheet for volunteers. Monday, on Memorial Day, at 1 p.m. James Madison Park, Lee Rayburn of Madison's 92.1 FM will MC a program. Robert C. Kohler, nationally syndicated award-winning writer for the Tribune Media Service, is the keynote speaker. Other speakers will include Iraq War veterans Fran Weidenhoff and Dan Kaufman. Music will be provided by the Madison folk group Old Cool. Audience members will be invited to read the names of Wisconsin soldiers killed. Please join us in commemorating the sacrifices of these and other Americans who have given their lives for their country.
Number nine, number nine, number nine.
The Insurgent Radio Kiosk. You don't have to understand it. You just have to listen to it.
Number nine.
The history of May 23rd. I'm Cesar Chavez.
And I'm Emma Goldman. Today in 1934, in the Battle of Toledo, 10,000 strikers at Ohio's Autolite plant drive away police. Since most local police officers sympathized with the strikers, the company hired its own guards, and Sheriff David Krieger deputized them.
Today's battle began when one of the deputies beat an old man. An angered crowd then surrounded the plant, which held 1,500 scabs. The strikers broke into the factory three times.
It took hand-to-hand combat for police to repel them. Tomorrow, National Guard machine gun units will evacuate the scabs, but they will fail to intimidate the crowds. Strikers will stone the troops and drive them to the factory walls.
On the crowd's third advance, the troops will open fire, killing two strikers and wounding 15. Autolite eventually will pacify the strikers by closing its plants. Then, the auto parts maker will agree to recognize the union, increase wages, and rehire the strikers.
It's this weekend's action calendar.
Today is the first day of the New Glarus Community Fest. Dance to live country and rock music from great Midwest bands in the New Glarus Village Park. All proceeds benefit area youth. Visit swisstown.com for more information.
This Saturday, Alliance for Animals will sponsor its annual World's Largest Vegetarian Bratfest at Whole Foods, 3313 University Avenue. Free vegan tofurkey brats will be available as a healthy...
Thank
Thank you for listening to this free program provided by WORT Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Become a listener sponsor. Donate to WORT online at WORTFM.org or call 608-256-2001 during business hours.